Good morning, everyone. This is a Public Service Commission work session, so we don't take testimony or anything. We just discuss information that we've received. I'm Randy Christman, joined by Commissioner Sherry Haugen-Hoffert. Commissioner Haugen-Hoffert, this is, of course, your portfolio. Commissioner Fedorchak is tied up on another project, but I believe we'll be here just very momentarily. I know some of while this is certainly your portfolio, the OMS portfolio has a big impact on this, and I know some of my comments have to do with some OMS things. Mm-hmm. So I guess I know I would rather maybe get into my thoughts and comments once she is here, but I think it'd be fine if you want to, if you want to kick it off and whatever kind of roundup of the case that you might have, either you or staff, however you want to proceed, Commissioner.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Christman. With this work session, I'm going to frame it up this way as the portfolio holder. Based on the last work session, there were inquiries that we, as commissioners, had. Information that we requested both from MDU and Otter Tail, but then also MISO. So I thought it would be best, I talked to staff, that Chris is going to summarize some of his communication that he's had with the two utilities. And then, Adam, I believe I've asked you to go through some of the MISO information that we inquired, so we have the foundation of what the inquiries were. And then at any time, Randy and I, or when Commissioner Fedorchak comes, we might ask for further information. So just to let everybody know how this work session is going to go. So, Chris, I'll turn it over to you as far as the communication between MDU, Otter Tail, and yourself, and the information that we requested.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. I'm Chris Hansen. I'm Public Utilities Department staff here with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. As part of the follow-up, we had some inquiries of Otter Tail and MDU, and Jason Wires, who's here, was the one that responded on a lot of these, and I have a little bit of follow-up that wasn't in the data request that he followed up with recently that I'll add in here. So there were basically three questions that we were asking them specifically coming out of the last work session. The first question was, what N1 events were identified as justification for the line, and which of these were in North Dakota? I mentioned events versus elements. He's talking about in the write-up that there were 40 transmission elements and 97 transmission elements, 40 transmission elements there were thermal issues and 97 elements during N1 events. It got a little conflated between elements and events and stuff like that. So Jason did some follow-up on the question, And I'm going to work off of his follow-up as opposed to the actual response to the question, because it's actually more clarifying. He said, upon our review of the MISO study results from the Tranche 1 studies, we've identified that the Jamestown-Ellendale 345 kV project, in combination with the Big Stone-Alexandria-Cassie Crossing, or Big Oaks 345 kV project, relieves thermal loading issues on 56 elements during N1 events instead of the 40 that was noted in their initial response. Of the 56 events, or 56 elements that had their thermal issues relieved with these two projects, 8 of those elements were in North Dakota, so like 14 out of the 56 were in North Dakota. Based upon the evaluation of the thermal issues, we used engineering judgment to conclude that all 8 of these transmission elements in North Dakota are likely a direct result of adding the JETX project to the system. Likewise, a review of the MISO study results from the Tranche 2 studies have identified that the Jamestown-Ellendale and the Big Oaks project, the Big Stone to Big Oaks project, relieves voltage issues on 70 transmission elements during N1 events instead of 97.
Chris,
and of the 70 transmission elements.
Excuse me, Chris.
Sorry?
One quick second. Just to bring me up to speed, what are you reading from?
Commissioner Haugenhofer asked that I follow up on some of the responses to the questions that we had for MDU and Otter Tail.
Uh-huh.
And Jason Weyers responded to this about, and the question was, what N1 events were identified as justification for the line, and which of those were in North Dakota?
Okay.
So we were wondering about how much of the N1 and the N1 ones were related to North Dakota, because
uh-huh.
the project was noting the total amount, but it was a combination of North Dakota, South Dakota,
yeah.
Minnesota. So
is that something we can all get a copy of, or do we have that?
This is docketed.
This
one I just got this morning. So
okay.
I literally was reading it before the meeting. So
okay.
Jason,
I think it sounds like there's a lot of great information, but it might be easier for us to follow it if we had copies of it while you went
through
it.
Can I take a second to do it?
Yeah,
you
is that right, Randy?
Sure.
What's that? No, you go with the MISO stuff. You're the MISO guy.
Sorry.
I will say this, though. The previous work session was 2 months ago.
Yeah, right.
And so now we're getting answers this morning.
Yep. So while Victor's making a copy of that, just a note, too, that to clarify that when they were looking at the N1 and N11 events, 2 points to clarify on that is that's based upon, like, 10- and 20-year projections. So they're looking at the projected load, and they're looking at projected generation growth, and then they're looking at basically these constraints that will cause congestion. So it's a projection of where they think the system will be and where transmission needs to be built out going forward. And so the second point to make is when on the Ellendale to Jamestown line is that when they're looking at these issues, these N1s and these N11s, that's a combination of both the Jamestown to Ellendale line and the Big Stone to Big Oaks line. So it's not just the Jamestown to Ellendale in
sure.
isolation. So it's looking at the complete thing. So
which are both part of Tranche 1.
Right. So, and I guess there's a third thing, too, that is pointed out, that there's currently a 345 line that runs from Coyote to, I think, Maple River that runs through Jamestown. If you think of that as leg one, and if you think, and then there's currently a line that was built in 2018 that goes from Ellendale to Big Stone, and you think of that as leg three, the Jamestown to Ellendale is leg two of the 345 kV circuit, if you want to call it that, and then they're extending Big Stone through Alexandria to Big Oaks, which is approximately in the St. Cloud area of Minnesota. So that's kind of like leg four of this whole thing. So we have currently leg one and three, and they're basically adding legs two and four to this 345 kV line to get power out of North Dakota and moving it to the east, or I guess power can move both directions. But
mm-hmm.
So just a little clarification that the N1s and the N11s are forward-looking. The congestion issues, the N1s and the N11s are those are a combination of both the Big Stone to Big Oaks line and the Ellendale to Jamestown. And the third thing is that part of the when they looked at this project, it was completing this whole like loop of lines, basically going from all the way from the Coyote up in the coal country into Minnesota. So getting back to the N1s and the N11s, they updated their numbers, like I stated. So to reiterate for Commissioner Fedorchak, that instead of lost my place here a little bit, instead of 40 transmission elements that were related to thermal, there was actually 56, and they identified 8 of those were specifically in North Dakota. So that's 14%. So one seventh, and that would be likely relieved by this line. And then instead of the 97 that they previously identified, there were 70 transmission elements instead of the 97 that were previously noted. And of the 70, 21 of those were in North Dakota, or about 30% of those then those were the ones related to the voltage. So anyways, there's, you know, 14% of one and 30% of the other. So there's a representative portion of the total that were involved. And in the MISO, response, it actually points out some of the substations, transformers, and lines that would be affected by that specifically, where they see the constraints without this being constructed. So that's kind of in response to the first question, which came out of the last working session, which was looking at this project and saying, well, how much of this was actually within North Dakota jurisdictionally? That was one of the questions we had. And the second question that we had was...
Chris, summarize that for me. I mean, they talked about the project benefits and all these voltage violations and all that. So when we narrow it down to North Dakota, mm-hmm. we had 17% and about 30%.
Right, of the ones they noted. So they specifically stated that just related to North Dakota, there would have been 8 of the thermal, and there would have been 21 of the voltage N1s and N1, you know, N1 events or N1 elements that would have been located in North Dakota.
Go ahead.
Would have been or
would be.
Eventually
well, okay.
be?
Will eventually be. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, I know. It gets confusing because we have current congestion, but this is a forward-looking. The N1s and the N1s are forward-looking. So I will try to state that correctly. They're projecting that those will be in North Dakota.
So wrap it up as in a benefit to North Dakota, this line, on how it addresses this. I know it's forward-looking.
Right.
And that's one of the things that this is long-term transmission planning. So
yeah,
that
so
will eliminate the would-have bends, or what's the projections on the future?
Well, I mean, so these are elements that they're projecting are going to be constrained based upon Otter Tail and MDU's load growth as well as the projected generation growth. So essentially it's saying if we grow the generation and we grow the load, where are the constraints going to fall on the transmission side? So if you look at the 345 kV line, a couple quick items to note on that is that based upon how that's circuited, that can relieve about 2,000 megawatts of capacity or production. It can carry about 2,000 megawatts on the line. And as I recall, and Adam can clarify on this, but MISO also builds their system to be double circuited. So presumably then it could carry another set of 2,000 megawatt lines. So it presumably has about 4,000 megawatts of capacity potential on the line, 2,000 initially and 4,000. I mean, if they decided down the road to double circuit it, that they have that option to do that. So it would create a significant amount of capacity. I mean, I think the analogy we always use is the interstate highway system. This would create an enormous amount of capacity, coming in and out of North Dakota. So then these points of the 115 and the 230 lines where a lot of this is going over now, it would relieve a lot of those, or would relieve those lines and would avoid these constraints going forward.
Okay.
So does that answer your question?
Yep.
Okay.
I do.
The second question was exclusive of the need to get power out of North Dakota and to feed Ellendale, Big Stone, and the future Big Stone Sherburne lines, what other alternatives identified would have addressed the previously identified issues for less cost? And so when they came back, and basically the way MISO evaluated this is they had 6 different options, but every single one of these options included Jamestown to Ellendale. So there were 6 different ways that they tried to get the power from Big Stone into Minnesota and stuff. But as I pointed out, the way you can kind of look at this is Jamestown to Ellendale is the missing link between the Coyote to Maple River and the Ellendale to Big Stone. So every one of these options they looked at included building this line. So they obviously thought this was such a critical part of the infrastructure that that all of their options included this. So they didn't really, they didn't look at other options. This, I think this was basically something that they felt was pretty self-evident. And they did actually point out different options on like the Minnesota side about how to get the power into Minnesota and how to move it around Minnesota. But every one of the options included Jamestown to Ellendale. So they didn't really look at, I guess you could say they didn't look at other options because I think they felt this was such a critical part of the infrastructure. The other thing that I would note going to the MISO report is that, or the MISO response, is that they look at these tranches as a whole, and Adam deals with MISO more than I can, but they look at these as a whole. So they don't look at necessarily one project in isolation of the other projects. As I noted, when they evaluated this project, they evaluated it with the Big Stone to Big Oaks, both of those together, and looked at the constraints. But they also kind of look at the whole tranche one as kind of one big project. So and they point out specifically that if you take one part of the project or one of the projects out, it actually affects the whole tranche for the project. So they don't look at these things necessarily in isolation. So so in this case, they obviously felt that the Jamestown to Ellendale was a critical piece because they didn't actually have an option where it didn't include Jamestown to Ellendale. So that was my second question. The third question was, did MISO include the impact of Applied Digital's operation in future plans, as well as the prospect of generation west of Fargo in their calculations? If not, have either of your companies attempt to do this? So when they did the studies for Tranche 1, they did not include Applied Digital in those because they, and the other thing is that, so they did not include the Future 1 models, which was used for Tranche 1, was before Applied Digital got up and running. But they did actually include the 200 megawatts of natural gas generation west of Fargo. So we had the question specifically about whether it included that in the model. It does. They also pointed out that it includes 800 megawatts of solar generation in the mix as well. So they do actually take future generation plans into account on this, but Applied Digital was not included in the initial Tranche 1 analysis. They did point out, however, that when they did the LRTP Tranche 2.1 portfolio, which I think we've been having some conversations on lately, that does actually include the impacts of Applied Digital's load, and then doesn't say specifically if it's including their let's see here. It includes Applied Digital's operation and future plans in those subsequent models in the 2.1. So they're playing catch up. They didn't include it in the future one model, which was used for tranche one, but it is, as they go along, it's being updated in the future tranches. So I guess the answer to that is that Applied Digital wasn't included. Future generation was included. I would note that in my memo that one of Leif Clark, the engineer on our staff, actually did an analysis of the 12 months prior to ramp up of the first phase of Applied Digital and then looked at the 12 months after it was ramped up. And he did actually see that it did relieve a significant amount of the congestion on the system as it occurred at that time. So what that did is reduce the congestion and raise the LMP prices. And let me look at the numbers right here. So he found that it reduced the Ellendale 1 and 2. It reduced the MCC, which is the marginal congestion, by 69% and 56% from before to after. And then he showed that the LMP prices actually increased by 12% and 46%. So as you relieve congestion, it allows the power to flow more freely over it and it levelizes the LMP prices. So if you look at a map, like Victor was showing me yesterday, if you look at a map in North Dakota when it's constrained, we have excess production on windy days, so the prices are sometimes zero or even maybe even negative. And But that gets constrained so that it can't, and then you look east of that constraint into Minnesota and the prices are higher. So as you remove the constraint, it levelizes the prices. So the so as you remove the congestion, the LMP prices should will probably on average come up. That's the expectation.
For North Dakotans.
For North Dakotans, right. Yeah. So
the other great benefits of transmission for
well,
us.
Yeah, for customers. But then yeah. So that was the three responses that we had from them.
Can I say, on that though, when those LMP prices go so low, negative, or even if it's $5 or $10, when those come up, it's because energy is flowing, meaning it's getting somewhere else and mm-hmm. lowering there, and so it somewhat balances out.
So
correct
that's the goal.
Yeah.
Well, and it's pointed out too that for a consumer, then it means they're not getting super uber low prices, which is like what Applied Digital is saying. Why they located where they're at is because they're getting this super low energy price. But the other thing it does is it levelizes prices. Is that it theoretically, but I think logically, would mean that it should provide a more incentive for our thermal to produce mm-hmm. as well. When the prices get depressed to the point where the coal gets interrupted or the gas gets interrupted, if those prices levelize more, it should provide a better environment for them to operate on a more consistent basis as well too. So it's a trade-off on things. So those are the basic questions that we had. We also had the MISO response. I think I'll read my summary of that so that I don't have to go through the.
Are you going to go through that, or is Adam? Okay.
Adam preferred I did that. So the MISO response, I'll just kind of read from the memo, and I apologize. We just got this the day before yesterday and late in the day or something like that. So so this is a pretty quick turnaround on things. As a result of the session, we sent a request to MISO to explain the benefits to address the key reliability and economic benefits of the project. In response, we received a letter from Jeremiah Doner, the director of cost allocation with MISO on October 14th, addressing the justification and benefits of the project. He states that this project will remedy the N1 and N11 issues noted in the previous memo, and he identifies the elements that are projected to be affected by thermal overload and voltage issues. As I noted, these N1 and N11 events and elements are projected. Oh, the MISO report? Sorry. are projected based upon each company's long-term forecasts of load and generation growth. Essentially, they're projected overloading the lines, transformers, and substations that could result in customer outages and the reliability issues. Mr. Doner further notes that in not constructing that not constructing this project. I got a double negative here. But essentially, he noted that not constructing this project would affect the entire Tranche 1 because it's a critical element of it. Obviously, we're moving power out of North Dakota, so you could probably argue that this is one of the more critical elements of the whole Tranche 1 is the ability to move and not have this power get constrained into North Dakota. I also point out that he was the one that pointed out about how this is kind of basically a leg in the line of the Coyote to Maple River and the Ellendale to Big Stone line. So this connects up those lines. I pointed out how they looked at five alternatives to this, but all proposals included the Jamestown to Ellendale line. He does say, too, Mr. Doner identifies that these projects will provide more reliable and efficient delivery of energy from low-cost, regionally sited generators. He further notes that this build-out will, quote, allow for the continued interconnection to new generation resources in areas that offer higher capacity factors for intermittent resources such as wind generation. So he specifically called out that they see that this is an opportunity to connect up more wind generation. In other words, it creates additional capacity for the wind to be transmitted from North Dakota eastward. I said additionally, and then I got into basically the response I just talked about. So you know, essentially he's saying it's critical. It's critical to the Tranche 1. They see it as an opportunity to get more generation resources out of North Dakota, but they specifically did call out more wind, intermittent wind resources as part of that. That was basically his response. And also in the MISO letter, he talks about the specific elements that are being affected in lines. Like I said, the transformers, substations, and lines that are being affected by the forecasted N1 and N11s. So that's kind of the MISO letter in a nutshell.
Adam, do you have anything else to add?
Just to say that I think we have to realize that this is, we're dealing with generation futures that are projected in, 2042? So this was based on future one. Each year we update, or each tranche prior to the LRTP process, MISO updates that generation profile based on member plans and IRPs and such. So now we have future 1A, in which MISO then reassesses what benefits come out of connecting both tranche 1 as well as, in this case, tranche 2.1. So I would say that an advantage of what we have in terms of how the commission can influence that decision, when we look at the type of resources that are assumed in North Dakota, because it's in 2042, this commission now has the tool, which is an IRP, to influence what type of resource is preferred. So the question is then, what kind of resources hook up into this line is somewhat dependent on commission preference as well. And I would say that will become even more important for tranche 2.1 and 2.2.
Whose IRP has that 800 megawatts of solar in North Dakota that this was based on?
I'd have to take
a
look.
It wouldn't be just one IRP.
Yeah.
It's collective. They look at all the company plans. So some of it might have been specific, but, and they try to argue that there are sort of specific locations, but I think it's, I don't know, in our analysis, we think MISO is overstating that, how much specificity they're seeing in the IRPs, and using some judgment as to what resources are going to end up where in their modeling.
Right. So these are placeholders. And a lot of times these placeholders are a generic technology or a technology that doesn't even exist. So there's room to pivot.
And so how effective is our IRP process if they don't really go by them, they go by whatever placeholders they make up?
Well, the placeholder, let's say for a CT, would be somewhat, it would be dispatchable. So they might consider that in one IRP based on their carbon preference, they might consider it powered by hydrogen.
I think what Randy's getting at is a little broader. They look at the IRPs, and to the extent that the IRPs say where stuff is going to be and when, they use that. The problem is a lot of the IRPs aren't that specific. It might be a more general goal. And so they then have to use judgment as to where they think those are going to end up. And so that's step number one. And step number two, we don't have them yet. So they haven't been able to use any direction from what we've said because we don't have it.
But the companies have them.
The companies, they use the company plans, yep.
And so that's
and anything
I was wondering,
that they've announced from the companies.
Companies' IRP would have contained that?
Well, yeah. Otter Tail has solar, so does XL has quite a lot of solar.
Yep.
So
in North Dakota.
Well, wherever. It may or may not be in North Dakota.
So just for clarification, everyone that's in the MISO, all the companies have submitted an IRP to MISO.
No.
So then how do they base it on? Is it load growth?
They base it on whatever IRPs are available.
Okay.
Because not every state does them. It's, right. There's a broad difference between states. Some states have them. Some states don't have them. Some companies use them and provide them to us like they have
right.
over years, and we've just kind of received them. So whatever IRPs they have, they use. And then they look at, it's not like a one set plan. You have sure. to get over this idea that there's like one formula for this. It's a bunch of information that they're collecting to try to build this vision of the future as close as they can imagine it to be. So they pull in the IRPs, they pull in any announcements that the companies have made. Like Xcel has said, we're shutting down the Sherco units. That's an announcement. They consider that to be firm. They use that. They put that into their model. And any other company announcement that they have, they plug those in. And then they look at state directives. Minnesota has a law. So they assume that the companies in Minnesota have to meet that law, and they bake that into their plans. But maybe the companies haven't said how they're going to do it yet, so that's where they use some of these placement resources to make a judgment for, well, Minnesota has to have, you know, all the companies have to have 30%, whatever, 30% sure. solar by whatever date, or and so they plug that into their models. And then the models have to pick, in the cases where there aren't specific locations identified yet, the models pick where they think those are going to be. And so there's a ton of judgment going into these futures. But at the same time, transmission planning takes a long time, and you can't, there's no planning for it if you don't do that, because mm-hmm. it takes so long to develop it and site it and build it that you're always going to be making it based on what you think the future is going to be. So this is the models that they've used for their futures. And then they have, you hear them talk about low end, like the future one, future two, future three. Future one is the most conservative. So that looks at like as closely to the state laws, the existing plans of the companies, and their IRPs as much as like they know to be happening, as close to that as they can predict. So it's the most conservative, the least amount of judgment. Future three is the most amount of judgment. It looks at trends. It looks at like, okay, the maximum amount of decarbonization, the maximum amount, or, you know, not maximum, but a larger amount of decarbonization, of EV adoption, higher demand growth, all of those sorts of things. That's future three. And then future two is kind of right in the middle. And so there's this all this discussion on which future you're using for which tranches, and they're constantly looking at, okay, when we started future one, it was like, how many years ago, Adam, did we start with future one? And
three, four years.
Yeah, now we've got actuals to plug mm-hmm. in to see, like, how are we trending? Are we close to future one? They're seeing, actually, that it's trending closer to some of the more aggressive futures. So that's why you see them adopting more aggressive plans for the transmission system. And that might pivot back because, you know, with demand growth and the reality of the system and the excessive retirements, you might see, I hope we see, companies pulling back and slowing down. And so you might see it going the other way in the next couple of years. So it's a very iterative approach, but also recognizing that, you know, you got to pull the trigger on some things along the way. You can't just constantly plan. So. When I look at this memo from MISO, the one piece that I think is worth pulling out, well, there's a few kind of conclusions that I reach, but one piece that I think is worth pointing to is on the bottom of page 2 of the Jeremiah Doner letter, which is the second one back. I don't know if I have the same. Is this a copy that everybody got? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, so page 2, under reliability benefits, and Randy, I see you've highlighted it. with the second to last paragraph, the last sentence, without the JEDEX project, these reliability issues would still be present on the local area transmission systems in the future and will need to be mitigated by local reliability projects with the cost borne by the local transmission pricing zones. That's a fancy way of saying one of the benefits of this project is it takes care of these local issues that if we don't have this bigger project cost allocated to the entire MISO North footprint, we'll be paying for it ourselves. These fixes. Now, they might be smaller. It's not going to be as big of a project, but there still wouldn't be any cost share on those sorts of things. And I think that that's an important consideration for these. That and the fact that, you know, as we see the shrinking capacity, availability of dispatchable capacity in the entire MISO footprint right now and the increased demand, the capacity that North Dakota has is extremely valuable. And this is an outlet for that capacity to places that are going to need it. So it's a highway for it.
And so I'm so frustrated. I don't know what to do with this case because it's like two things merged and there's never a right place to start to draw a line on something. My frustration is with the allocation of the costs. We go through these things, and whether it was from way back, the Otter Tail and MDU filings that talked about benefits, including distribution of renewable energy, reduced carbon emissions, and landowner payments, or what MISO just got into, which benefits is basically getting more renewables on the system, so just not going quite as far. It's the benefits is largely to the developers, not to North Dakota ratepayers. And to challenge MISO's allocation, once we've already approved this CPCN, seems backwards. And so I sort of feel like almost that in one effort, this should be denied and we should be initiating a FERC case or something. I don't know how you really fight that allocation because there's this over $10 billion and then the second tranche and the third tranche and the fourth tranche. This is almost... This tranche is almost $6 a month for those Otter Tail customers. And I don't know what their customer in Garrison or Fessenden gets out of this. And I don't know what MDU's customer in Williston or Bismarck gets out of this. Theirs is less. It's a little over three, I think. But a FERC case is really expensive, too. And... Mm-hmm. I really feel like what MISO is doing here, and I kind of relate back to my old co-op board days, and I know big difference between co-ops and IOUs, but, you know, if somebody wanted to build a house 10 miles from any of our old facilities, except for some old copper line that hadn't been used in 40 years... there would have been some aid to construction. Now, when our team came in over the winter and said, like, okay, here's the area where we're having problems, we would, you know, plan for construction for that summer and maybe rebuild that area because it was having problems. But when we ask for what the reliability issues here are, it's not like they're saying, oh, well, down there in Enderlin, there's just these frequent voltage issues and things like that. Or over at Valley City, we've had power shortages time and time again. We had one in Jamestown that the way we often work through our evaluations of reliability would probably just fall as major event days. I spoke down some lines. I don't know if this would have helped that either. But this isn't really solving any problems that exist. This is solving problems that some developers want to add to the system and that will exist once they add their developments to the system. And I really view this as MISO eliminating the interconnection charges. We will build this way in advance, just like my example of the guy that wants to build way out on the old copper line, and then our construction crew come in and say, he can't afford to do that. The aid to construction would be too much. We'll build the fiber out there, and then when he comes, it won't cost so much for him to hook up. Well, but it costs everybody else. And to me, that's all we're doing here with this tranche one is eliminating interconnection charge to developers. And like I say, we approve this. I don't know how we fight this allocation at MISO, because that is really the problem. If the developers were paying for this, I don't think I'd have any objection. But I also, it's a big battle to initiate a case of FERC, and so some thoughts.
Well, I certainly understand your frustration and share a lot of it. Maybe I've been beat down because I've been at this longer on this particular tranche. So I have two thoughts. First of all, I think we should, I would like to talk with our council about and get a more clear advice and discussion of options for our legal paths kind of moving forward, because I think you raise a good point about how, what we do here and how it affects future issues. My real concerns are with Tranche 2. I think that there's more legitimate benefits, two of which I just talked about, on this project and everything in Tranche 1, which is much more focused on future, on the future one growth scenario, change scenario, which is pretty realistic, I think. So I'm more comfortable with Tranche 1. I don't love it, and I still would have liked a generator pays component in the cost allocation. But that would have, again, not given them 100% of the cost, but a higher share going to the people who are demanding it. But that didn't happen. So that said, I think there's much more benefits on this project, in these two projects, or this project, and the whole Tranche 1 for North Dakota. So I separate them a little bit, but I would like to have a discussion with Jack and Brian and probably our FERC advisors on what our paths forward are, because I think we're seeing more and more concerns on Tranche 2 and want to do whatever we can to preserve maximum rights for fighting that one. So that's where I'm at.
And I just want to add one more thing that I forgot on my tirade. It also bothers me on this planning. The modeling, man, we can see way out into the future all this stuff. Within 2 months, although right to the hour, we can recalculate and come up with even more N minus 1 and N minus 1 minus 1 benefits involved here. We can do all that. We can envision 800 megawatts of solar in North Dakota, most of which has never been applied for. We can envision 200 megawatts of natural gas, the company for which has an incentive in place, and they're trying to get out of it. So I'm not saying that is real likely at the moment, anytime soon. But it's just too much of a burden to calculate in what already exists. a big user down at Allendale, that's only been there a year. It'd be overwhelming to try and calculate that in.
Well, in their defense, those models, that modeling was occurring probably 3 or 4 years before that came online. And those models are massive.
But this morning we had adjustments to the NMA.
Well, but those were already done. Those models had already been run, and they were just pulling from stuff. I'm assuming. I don't know. But
I think they did note that the 2.1, on the current tranche, that they actually had taken into account the current Ellendale and the projected plans from Ellendale into the 2.1. So,
yeah.
So they do update them, but as we've noted before, they don't go retroactive on these. They don't go back to tranche one and say relook at it. So,
yeah.
And you also have to realize that those contracts can be renegotiated after 5 years.
True.
Good point.
So, Adam or Julie, have you talked within MISO that looking at tranche one, if one of the legs is not approved, what that means?
Mm-mm.
Can you?
I haven't.
It's a package.
Okay.
They put it through as a package, and that's the risk of all of these, projects as they go to the states then.
Okay.
The states.
I was just
where
wondering.
Where they're being built. Now, we won't have any say on any of the other
correct
ones, but this one is in our territory and with our utilities, so, yeah. But it's happened before it happened. There's a line in, what's the first? I've lost the acronym for the first build-out. What was it?
The MVP?
MVPs.
Yeah. Yep.
MVP, the first one, or so. I don't. Anyway, one of those MVP lines is still in court in Wisconsin, so it's not unprecedented that these projects get tangled up.
Okay. Did we receive the information that was requested from MDU?
Otter Tail responded for both Otter Tail and MDU. On the questions.
Okay, thank you. Anybody have anything else? Our legal counsel has been prepped for the questions that have been asked, so I know that was certainty. So
in terms of next steps, maybe we can look at getting, I'll do what I need to do and talk to you guys about my thoughts on next steps. And then we could all do the same and you guys could decide what the next steps are, I guess. I do think we should try to get this moving, though, and not dilly-dally too much longer. So I will try to do my part to make that happen.
Anything else?
No, I think I've already directed staff.
Okay.
And I've talked to legal counsel, so we're moving forward.
Anything else from staff? Okay, this work session is closed. Thanks, everyone.